to the Football Game Plan Radio Network. I'm your host, Emory Hunt, the Czar of the Playbook, and this is our Shrine Game recap show. We're recapping day two, the practices that are going on right now down in St. Petersburg, Florida. The East-West Shrine Game takes place Saturday, January 17th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And as always, if you have a question, you can call into the show directly at 323-657-1489. You can hit me up on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. We also have our Facebook chat line open as well. So if you have any questions, we'll get to those in the show. But again, as always, follow the show live at blogtalkradio.com/footballgameplan. And if you missed this show and want to hear this taping again, you can find it archived at footballgameplan.com/network. You can download it on iTunes, and that way you can listen to this recap of what we're going to go through from the East and the West squads from the East-West Shrine Game practices day two. I've already put out day one notes on Twitter, so you guys can go back and look at my timeline and search those and get all of the key notes and key tidbits from yesterday's practice. And now we're going to talk about today's practice. But again, 323-657-1489. If you have a question, if you have a comment, you can follow me on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. I'm also on Instagram. Football Game Plan is our Instagram handle. Vine is also Football Game Plan. Pretty much everything that we have social media wise, almost tailors around Football Game Plan or FBGP. So you can't go wrong with that. But again, Vine is Football Game Plan. Instagram, Football Game Plan. That's one word as well. And also, this is the Blog Talk Radio Network, which is blogtalkradio.com/footballgameplan. The archive of any one of our podcasts will be on the website at footballgameplan.com/network. Don't forget to check out and subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is at youtube.com/footballgameplan. And if you want all of your 2015 East-West Shrine Game notes in one place, it's going to be on our website at footballgameplan.com/2015Shrine Game. We made it easy for you guys, so that way you can go get all of the info, all of the notes in one spot. We didn't make it hard for you guys, so that's the type of user-friendliness we utilize here at Football Game Plan to make it easy for you. But just looking at some early questions that we have on our website, we're going to take questions throughout the course of this show. So again, hit us up on any one of our social media outlets or call in live for with your question, and we'll answer it right there on the air. But one of the first questions we got is from Justin Higdon. He asked a question, and he was jokingly asking the question about last night's championship game with Cardale Jones, the Ohio State Buckeyes quarterback, winning the national championship for the Buckeyes. And he asked the question, do you think he's a first-round pick? But he's joking, poking fun at people, thinking that he can go in the first round. But I want to answer that question because I do believe Cardale Jones is in an interesting situation because he's a guy that has talent. He can make all of the throws. All of those cliches you throw out there for a football player, Cardale Jones has that. He can do anything he wants to on the football field. The problem is, you know, it's only three games. But you can see both sides of the argument. Three games, yes, but they were three of the biggest games. And you want to judge a quarterback how well they do under pressure. And when you look at those three games, you can't get any more pressure-type situations than that. I mean, if he comes back for another season, how will playing against Florida International or, you know, Indiana or Illinois show you what you just saw versus Wisconsin, versus Alabama, and now versus Oregon? It won't show you much. So the thing is, with Cardale Jones, he's played in the biggest games. He's excelled. Now, on the football field, from a skills perspective, yes, he can throw the football wherever he wants to. He does have mobility. I wouldn't say he's a runner, but he does have the ability to pick up the first down and gain yards. But if I was to slap a grade on a redshirt sophomore right away after watching three games, I would put him right there in the middle of the pack, third, fourth round. And you know he's a guy that hasn't played a lot of football. So that's something as a coach that you would want, or an evaluator, you want that type of guy coming in to your program because that's the type of player that you can groom. And although I am a big proponent of guys that leave school as seniors or as juniors, you are what you are as a football player. You don't get better once you become a pro. But these younger guys, like a redshirt sophomore, you can get better because they still have that quote-unquote 2 years of development left in their game. So if he was to come out, he has the development that coaches would look for as opposed to, let's say, a senior that has only played three games or four games a la Kenny Guyton last year, who ended up going to the Arena League, the L.A. Kiss. And he's ultimately going to be a coach. I think that's what he wanted to do. But there were talks last year from people saying, you know, Kenny Guyton is better than Braxton Miller, which wasn't true in my opinion. But Kenny Guyton is a guy that does have talent. He does have skill. He went undrafted. He got into a camp, got cut, and now he's in the Arena League. And you don't want to see Cordell Jones go down the same path because Cordell Jones ultimately doesn't want to become a coach. He wants to play football. So, and I said it earlier on Twitter, he had three options. He can stay in school, he can transfer, or he can go pro. If it was up to me, I would say he'll be the type to be a late transfer, like in a post-spring transfer. So he's going to spring, compete with Braxton Miller, compete with JT Barrett, and whoever wins that job. If he's not number one, if he's number two, if he's number three, I believe he's going to be a guy that's going to transfer out late. Because if you think about it, you look at maybe a guy like Tre Robeson, who plays for Illinois State, that just led to the FCS championship game, one bad drive defensively away from winning the national title. He was a late transfer. He only got there in August, picked up the system, and led them to the title. So I can see the same thing happening for Cordell Jones or JT Barrett, whomever, which one of those younger guys will leave. And I will say this, if Braxton Miller returns to Ohio State, I'm willing to bet that Urban Meyer will show him the respect of a senior, a guy that went through injuries, a guy that's coming back to the program, allow him to start and make it his job to lose. So once again, you look at him being a guy that is now coming off two injury-plagued seasons. At some point, numbers say that both of those guys will play, whoever is going to be number two and also the starter. So may have the situation again next year. And I'm pretty sure Ohio State, with that young football team, will be blowing a lot of teams out, so everybody will get a chance to play. And what I like about Urban Meyer, he keeps his foot on the gas. He's not going to put a backup quarterback in there and hand the ball off. He's going to allow him to throw. He's going to allow him to complete passes. So guys will get their reps in games. And if that's what scouts want to see moving forward from him, team experience, then they'll get that next year, whether it be in a limited role as a number two or number three or as a starter. But if I had to give any advice to Cordell Jones, my advice to him would be to stay in school, compete for that job. And if you don't get it and you feel as though you want to play right away, you want to play right now, transfer to an FCS, a good year of film in as a junior, and then leave early and go to the pros. So that's what I would do if I were Cordell Jones in this unique situation, playing the three biggest games of the year in the most pressure-packed situation and excelling at all three, winning a title for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Unique situation. He didn't play against Florida Atlantic. He didn't play against Florida International or Directional Michigan. He played the biggest games on the biggest stage without playing all season long, was able to lead those guys to a championship. So unique situation, three games in. You can draw a lot from that. You can see traits. You don't have to see seven games of him doing different things. You can see traits, and with those traits, those are things that translate. It's not necessarily the production that you're looking at. You're looking at traits. Can he make the throw to the outside? Can he make the throw down? Can he throw into a tight window? Those are the traits you're looking for when you're judging prospects. And if he has those traits, then you can do a lot with that, and the production will come as you coach him up and he becomes more acclimated to your system and what to look for from a defense. So I think he can play. It's about, do you have the time as an NFL coach to groom him? So that's where I stand on that. That was a great question, Justin. And I hope a lot of guys were talking about him being a first-round pick, but I just think, again, dial it back, let the guy develop, let the guy play, let him make his own choice. Because whichever one he makes, it has to be something that he wants to do. What's best for him and his situation. So thanks for that question. And we're moving on to what we're here for and what I'm in Tampa for. And it's been a great experience so far. I'm here for the East-West Shrine Game. And this is my third year attending the East-West Shrine Game. It's a lot of fun. And the one thing I always look for when I come down here is the fact you look for how guys compete. And a lot of times you got guys that are going to come from different places. You have guys coming from bigger schools. You have guys coming from FCS programs, a couple of D2 programs. Even up in Canada, the CIS, which is a Canadian college football organization, guys coming down playing in the Shrine Game. So you want to see how guys compete throughout the course of the practices. It starts off slow, then it gets jam-packed in the middle of the week, and then it dies off leading up to game day. So you want to see how they compete. But I'm also interested in seeing the coaching staffs. The last 2 years, you had Jerry Glanville, you had June Jones, some all-star guys in there coaching up the defense and offense as far as position coaches are concerned. But now you have a new staff. You have Jim Zorn. You also have Mike Singletary coaching one squad. He's coaching the East. Jim Zorn is coaching the West. Some big names out there. And Andre Carter, former first-round pick of San Francisco, he's coaching the defensive line. You also have Howard Mudd, the longtime Philadelphia Eagles offensive line coach. He's coaching the West squad as well. So there's a lot of big names. Johnny Holland, you remember him playing football in the NFL. Kevin Ramsey, outstanding coach. Ty Knott, all those guys are coaching. So you want to see the coaching staff. And what I will say about a guy like Mike Singletary is that you know him as a fiery guy. You know him as a guy that was in players' faces. And now you see him removed from that head coaching job. And now in this situation, and he's actually become more of a teacher instead of a guy that's screaming at players. And that's the growth you want to see. And that's only going to bode well for him moving forward. So kudos about the coaches. It's been a great experience. The weather's been perfect. I've been complaining about the heat, but it has been hot for me coming from north, and it has been raining. But we're looking for clear weather throughout the course of the week. It was for today. We had a great day of practice for both teams. And we're going to start breaking down the East team. And again, if you have any questions, call the number is 323-657-1489 to ask your question. I'm here all night answering those questions, but we're going to take a look at the E squad, guys that stood out, guys that stepped up, guys that surprised. And I'm going to look at number one, Trey McBride, the wide receiver, William & Mary. Now, he impressed yesterday. He impressed yesterday with route running, catching the football, getting out his breaks. And he did the same thing today, and it's just far and above how talented he is as far as compared to the rest of the receivers in terms of what he brings to the table. Pure route runner, hands catcher, away from his body, all those scouting cliches you hear, fits Trey McBride. He's definitely had a great 2 days of practice. You also look at another guy that stood out today, and I'm becoming a big fan of his game, and that's Wes Saxton Jr. of South Alabama. He's listed at 6'4", 240. Probably be closer to 6'3", 245. He is an inline guy. He can play flex. He played flex at South Alabama. Now, inline this game, or this week, he has done a solid job in one-on-one drills. I posted a video. You can see him getting off, blocking up front, inline. Now, flex, his route running has been impressive. And this is a guy that can track a football, very good hand, very smooth route runner. And I always toss this out for players that – guys that have those little nuances to their game that you really can't coach. It comes with the experience, the fact that he played a lot of football as a kid or played a lot of football growing up. And you can see that from Wes Saxton, a guy that his route running is so natural for him at that position. So you can see him excelling in a role maybe where he can be a Charles Clay type player for a football team. And he had a lot of production at South Alabama. You know, there's a football team that just started their football program recently and producing some good talent, whether it be in the secondary with the corner prospect that they have coming out this year. There's some juniors on that team that are very talented. You know about Brandon Bridge, the quarterback in Saxton, has been on the radar for a long time, and he has done exceptionally well, especially in this practice. Very soft hands. I saw him extend for a pass, and I'm a big fan of guys that can extend and lay out the ball. That type of sacrifice will carry you a long way in the league. So he has done a great job. Another guy that has stood out, let's move on the offensive line for the East team. And you look at Mississippi State's Beckwith. Today he was impressive. Hands stay inside, feet are where they're supposed to be. He's square, he's parallel, he's balanced. And when you're balanced and your hands stay inside, you're making guys move off spot and you're clearing out holes. And in the one-on-one drills, he did an exceptional job controlling guys and not allowing them to get penetration to get to the quarterback. He had a great day-to-day. Him and Dylan Day, two teammates, have done solid jobs. And a lot of times they've been playing with the same reps. So they've been in on the same reps, and they already had that continuity playing with each other for 4 years. So that type of continuity has translated to this game. But Beckwith today had an outstanding practice. So let's go to the phone line. Caller number one, you're on the line. What's your name? Where are you from?
Henry, Gene here. How are you?
Oh, Gene, calling in my man, Gene Clemens, our football game plan analyst. Gene, what's going on?
Nothing much. Just, you know, heard you were wrapping up and thought I would call in and rap with you about what was going on today for a little bit.
Okay, well, we're breaking down the East roster, and I just talked about the two Mississippi State Bulldogs, area offensive lineman Ben Beckwith, and also Dylan Day. And there was another guy, and I don't know if you've seen a lot of Miami play, but Jonathan Feliciano at 6'5", 320, had an outstanding day up front, leaning on guys. I mean, he was playing some great football in the trenches. Are you familiar with Feliciano?
Well, he's been a very interesting prospect. I look forward to getting a chance to see him tomorrow morning. I've watched him throughout the year, and I thought that Miami actually had a pretty plus line this year, and they had a lot of guys that have some pro potential. I think he's definitely one that this week, along with, you know, the offseason process, can really do a lot to raise his stock.
Yeah, and when you look at what he did today, I mean, it was impressive. This was 9-on-7, so inside drill, so to speak, and he was able to fire off the ball, drive, and seal that edge to where the running back had a way to cut back in, or they were running off tackle. You know, he had success there. So Feliciano had a great day, and also in one-on-one, resetting well, keeping his hands inside, that punch was there, and he was able to regather himself, reset, and then drive. So the guy wasn't getting penetration. He was combative versus the bull rush. Excellent for Feliciano. And another guy I want to bring up today had a very solid day, a better day than what he did yesterday, was Devin Gardner. And you know, we talked all throughout the course of the practices how Gardner looks the part for every position on the football field. Now, can he play the part is the question. And quietly, if you look at the quarterback play for both teams, you want to say that Gardner probably will be the better quarterback, but he's not out there playing quarterback. He's playing receiver. And what I saw today was a guy that looks like a quarterback trying to transition to receiver, almost like what Trent Stillman looked like last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember, from Army, trying to make that transition. His routes are fine. He's fine with the routes. It's the catching part that he has inconsistencies with, and you can imagine that coming from the quarterback position and now having to get off bump press, you know, get head around quickly, find the football, and catch the football. He's not natural doing that, and I think that's where he has problems. Do you see him being an effective receiver down line at the next level?
Well, I definitely think he has a lot of Cordell Stewart to him as far as the way in which Cordell played the position when they tried to transition him from quarterback to slash, if you will. I think that the problem is that people underestimate the technical aspect of playing wide receiver. There's a lot to think about. You have to think about the route. You have to think about the adjustments depending upon the coverage. You've got to defeat a man. And then you have to, in one encompassing move, get your hands ready to catch the ball, adjust to however the quarterback throws the ball, and then finally actually catch the ball. And I think that a lot of times people forget that there's so much that goes into the position technically that they think that anybody can transition. There's a reason why running backs or guys who have been running backs in college and undersized have had issues adjusting the playing in the slot. And the same for quarterbacks. there's a reason why they've had difficulties, not with necessarily the mental part of the game, but with the actual, you know, muscle memory that comes with, you know, beating your drum and beating somebody off the line of scrimmage and coming in and out of breaks and having your hands just naturally go where they're supposed to go. I think that's going to be an adjustment for him. But like you said, when you see him out there, he is a physically gifted athlete. He looks like a guy you want playing wide receiver on your team. He looks like a guy you want playing outside linebacker on your team. He looks like a 3-4, rush linebacker. He just looks like he should be playing football somewhere. And I think that that's going to help him when you get into those mid-rounds where teams are really taking not flyers on guys, but saying, hey, listen, his upside is way higher than, let's say, this polished wide receiver who has already maxed out at the college level. So I think that's going to help him. I believe we'll see him get better and better as the week goes on and ultimately possibly earn himself a berth at the Senior Bowl.
Well, you know what's impressive about him is the fact that, and you see this a lot from guys, but this the one thing he has going for him is his attitude. And that's huge because he has a great attitude toward whatever position put him at and whatever they're asking him to do. I saw him down there today doing special teams drill as a gunner and, you know, taking coaching well, enthused about the opportunity to be a gunner. And he just wants to play football no matter where it is. And he's a great football player as far as, you know, attitude is concerned. And he's talented enough to where he can play any position. And a guy like that, you know, coaches at the next level always make room for on the football team. Moving to the defense side.
Before we go on, Emory, I wanted to mention one more thing. You don't have to go far to see how Michigan quarterbacks adjust to the NFL. Just look at his predecessor. A guy like Shoelaces went to Jacksonville, and they tried to make him into a running back immediately. He wasn't ready. He struggled early. But he kept learning his craft. He had a positive attitude. He kept getting better and better. And before he got hurt, he had become, one of the more dynamic running backs in the NFL over, you know, those last few weeks where he was running roughshod over, you know, some good competition and putting up consistent, you know, 100-plus yard games on a team that had really a limited passing game to speak for. And that says a lot about what you envision the potential for Devin Gardner being, seeing that he is probably a bigger, you know, maybe not as fast, but definitely more physically imposing figure than, you know, Denard Robinson was.
And looking at the defensive side for the East team, starting with the linebackers, and those are the guys that I believe really stood out today in this practice. Amarlo Herrera out of Georgia had a great day as far as the individual portion of practice where they had to go one-on-one versus the running back and route combination and route coverage and also against the tight ends. He did a great job of coverage, keeping his hands on the hip and being able to follow the receiver and make a play on the ball. So he had a great day. Another guy, and I want to get your take on this one, Edmund Robinson out of Newberry College. You're very familiar with Newberry Division II football program. And he's a player that just looks the part. He's 6'3", all of 6'3", 45, very good movement skills. He excelled in pass coverage, and I was impressed with how well he's able to play up to speed versus these guys from LSU, guys from Louisville, tight ends all over the place, you know, from Louisville and from, you know, Boise State. So he's able to compete at a higher level. I was just very impressed with his skill set. I think this guy could be a gem and might even be one of those sleepers that you talked about earlier to move up. What are your thoughts on that Newberry College football program and why they're so dominant in Division II?
Well, I think what they've been able to do is they've been able to use their surrounding areas to get talent that you don't normally see at a Division II level. For whatever reason, whether it be guys who had academic trouble early, whether it be guys who fell through the cracks because there's so much talent, you know, in that area, or whether it be guys who are getting that second or third chance because they just, for one reason or another, didn't make it happen at their previous school. So I think you see them attracting talent, especially athletic talent, and using that to its ability. And I think their coaching staff should be applauded for, A, you know, finding those jewels, and then, B, for putting them in positions to just go out and play football and be the football player that they can be. I think that the one thing that will remain to be seen is when the bullets become live and the lights come on against these bigger names, you know, will he wilt? Will he struggle to make those, you know, in-play adjustments, or will he step up? And I think that'll go far to see whether or not, you know, he can be a Pierre Desir, you know, type of player this year, you know, a guy who really jumps on the page and becomes someone to look out for.
And moving to the defensive line, this guy right here impressed yesterday, and he also impressed today equally as well, as Za'Darius Smith from Kentucky, the defensive end, 6'5", 265. I'll tell you what, in one-on-one drills, every time his name was called, a number was called, he won with quickness, he won with the forward, he won with counter moves. He just beat offensive tack today in one-on-one drills. Za'Darius Smith out of Kentucky had an impressive, two days of practice, and I came away blown away with how well he's able to, you know, play any type of game from a technique standpoint, and that was very impressive to me. And the guy coming out of Kentucky,
he's a guy who I'm really looking forward to getting my eyes on, up close and personal tomorrow. Another guy that I'm looking to, and I'd like to get your opinion on how he's looked so far, is Anthony Chicolo, a guy that's out of, you know, Tampa, Florida, University of Miami guy, four-year starter contributor on the University of Miami. He's played a lot of defensive end. He's played primarily defensive end at University of Miami. I noticed this year they started to play around in some speed rush packages and putting them inside, but I think that his best position going forward is a position of, you know, a five technique, four eye in a three four look. What did you think of him when you saw him going through his progressions today?
Well, the funny part is he was another guy that I had earmarked. When you look at, you know how when you're going against someone, or you, let's say, one-on-one drills, and you just, that the light just comes on, you just get tired of it. You're like, you know what, I'm sick of this, I need to dominate. That light with him in his second rep going against an offensive tackle, where he just got tired and was like, bump this, I'm about to do damage. And he whipped the guy with quickness, his hands were violent, and he threw the offensive lineman out of the way to get to the dummy, which is the quarterback, and touch him. So I was impressed with his quickness, and you want to see if he has that go-get-it attitude all game long, all week long, and that's something I'm going to be looking for team drills tomorrow. Can he bring it each and every down like he did in that one, you know, particular drill, that one-on-one drill, where he just whipped the guy, because it's almost as if, like, you know how you just keep pushing someone, almost like they say the bully that keeps pushing the little kid, and the kid just responds and just whips his tail. That's what happened today with Chicolo in one-on-one drills. We have a question coming on Twitter pertaining to the East squad before we move to the West, and this question is coming from Tom at Tom Morris at T Morris 891. He asked the question: do you know anything about Kentucky's offensive tackle Darian Miller? If so, what's your take? What's his strengths and weaknesses? Well, to answer that question, he's another one of these offensive linemen that just stand out, almost like a guy on a West squad that we're going to talk about in a minute. But he had a great two. And the fact of the matter is, there's a reason why Kentucky started off hot this year. I mean, they were good on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They were getting competent quarterback play, and part of that was due to the fact that guys like Miller up front was doing a solid job in protection. So in one-on-one drills, because I always go to that first offensive line, because team drills, you really don't get a good read in these all-star game settings, but I think in one-on-one you get a great read on what a guy can do, and he excels. And again, it's about moving guys off the spot, keeping them out of the backfield. I think he was able to do a great job of mirroring and also playing the piano, so to speak, and being able to attack counter moves, keep this guy at bay. Now, we're going to move over to the West Squad, and thanks for the question time. Move over to the West Squad, Gene. And they, and just like we saw, we were together on Monday watching the West team practice. And right off the bat, we're going to start with the receivers because they jumped out a lot. They had some bad performances and some great performances. And the one guy that just kept popping up yesterday and today was Ezell Ruffin out of San Diego State. Talk about him and what you think he showed that you were out there, and also compound on that with what you're talking today.
Well, the first thing you notice is that he's built to take punishment. You can tell he has a very Anquan Boldin-like build to him. He's wearing every bit of that 210 pounds that's on that 6'1 frame. The other thing you noticed is that there was nothing flashy about what he did, but he just kept ending up with the ball in his hand. DBs couldn't jam him at the line of scrimmage. They couldn't knock him off of his route. He was catching the ball, and on Monday, there was inclement weather. You were talking about a slick ball. You were talking about water everywhere, rain. Every reason, every excuse to drop ball, and we dropped balls, and we saw several wide receivers drop several balls that were easily catchable. And he kept making difficult catches look routine. He had a one-hand catch where I thought he was going to catch it out of bounds. He was able to catch with one hand, tap down the left foot, and kind of turn and get the right foot down before he went out of bounds. And you looked at it, and you could see a few scouts on the sideline all kind of turn and look at each other like, who's this kid? And that's what you have to do if you want to get on the radar of some of these guys, because for many of these scouts and even for us, this is our first time getting actual live eyes on this kid. And he just kept on popping up and kept on making plays yesterday, not just in the one-on-ones, but in 7-on-7 and in team as well.
And today was the same thing. I mean, this was a guy that I thought, you know, at the end of the day, he could have closed shop and shut it down after yesterday's practice. But he built on that and showed that consistency from day to day. Because a lot of times you're going to see guys come out day one and they come out day two and lay an egg. He didn't. He stopped it up again, and he drew some coverage one-on-one, and I'm posting a video now versus Josh Shaw. That was a great matchup. We're going to talk about Shaw in a minute because he had another outstanding day today. But Ruffin did a great job today as a receiver once again. Another guy that had an impressive day yesterday, vastly improved, was Kason Williams from Washington. This is a guy that caught everything that they threw him. He was doing a lot of damage over the middle of the field, had a big gain after a reception, but I was impressed with how he was able to use his body, quote-unquote, as a third hand going across the middle and catching it in a way to where he protected himself, protected the ball, and was able to make a move once he got back on the ground, whether it was jumping completely up in the air or just getting that 1 foot off the ground and coming down and then making a move. He did a great job. He caught everything. He didn't drop a pass. He looked excellent in this game, as opposed to what we saw yesterday where you mentioned guys were dropping ball and, you know, looking inconsistent. And so he had a good day. And another receiver I want to get your thoughts on, De'Ron Brown from Northern Illinois. What we saw yesterday was he was the type of guy that was just running basic routes because he was trying not to fall. The field was a little bit dry, didn't rain at all, and he was winning consistently off the line. Do you think a guy like Brown coming out of Northern Illinois, we know how they play offense. They want to spread the field. They run a lot of zone read, and a lot of times those guys are seeing off coverage. And today he was winning versus press. So how does that help him in the long run in the eyes of evaluators that are watching him play today, this week?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. Yesterday we were looking at him and we were saying, basic. He did what he was supposed to do. He caught a ball. There was nothing spectacular. There was nothing that made you go, oh, okay, well, I can see flashes. Part of that probably had to do with the weather. and the fact that he was being a little bit more cautious, I would say, than some other wide receivers. But as you said today, what's going to help him is to show that continued growth day by day. And the fact that he was better today than he was yesterday is definitely going to resonate with a scout to say, okay, this kid is someone who's teachable. This kid is someone who can learn and process information quickly and put it into effect on the field. Because as you know, these NFL work days, once the season starts, you have to be able to disseminate that information very quickly and put it into effect with only maybe 1.5 practices worth of really get after it ball.
Right, you got to be good all the time. You got to be consistent all the time at the pro level. And I was impressed for him to turn up his game today and be a consistent player. Another guy that had a good day running routes and, you know, beating guys, not necessarily beating bump press, but just doing a job within his route, in his stem, climbing over top defensive backs and making plays, was the wide receiver that we also talked about yesterday in Jordan Taylor out of Rice, the 6'5", 210. Now, today, he played like he was 5 as opposed to yesterday, where we were talking about he didn't look like he played at 6'5". He looked like he was 6'2". But that difference right there, you just made the case for Brown. But Taylor had a great day today as well, and it's important for him. And he was matched up 1-on-1 versus his old teammate in Bryce Callahan, who stands about a good 5'9", 185. And so he was able to play big at times and do a great job in catching the football. Why does, I want to ask you, a former receiver, why does that thought or that comment comes out there when a guy is 6'5", like when we look at the guy from Georgia Tech, there's so many that the big, the guy, Waller, I was about to call him Smaller because of Smelton and Waller, but Waller, why do you look at certain receivers that's like 6'5", but we always say he doesn't play 6'5"?
Well, because they do things to take away their height. We noticed it yesterday. He was jumping on a few routes that he didn't necessarily need to jump in order to make a reception. Those are things that they do that take away from your height. When you use your height, you use your catch radius. That's really where you're able to excel over a defensive back. You keep everything within your body, and now when that defensive back is draped on you, you use that catch radius as a means of separation. And when you're jumping or when you're allowing the ball to come into your body, you're allowing that defensive back to then play bigger than he really is. And so what a lot of – and this is probably one of the hardest things for big wide receivers to learn, tall wide receivers especially, is to play big, because they're usually taught by people who are small, and they're usually taught the way in which those small people learn how to play the game, which is keep everything compact, you know, bring the ball into your body so that you can protect and shield yourself from a hit. But once these big wide receivers learn that they can be just as, you know, physical, if not more, than the defensive backs, that's when they open up and allow that catch radius to really become a weapon as far as separation from a defensive back.
Now, the tight ends, I was impressed with Blake Bell out of Oklahoma. He has seemed to have become comfortable at the tight end position. He and Michael Pruitt from Southern Illinois are two solid tight ends in the West. Definitely got that right with the rosters. Now, let's move on to the backs. And the guy that stood out today, had a great day, was Zach Zinner from South Dakota State. We talked about him yesterday and how big his jersey looked. And, you know, he just didn't look like he was supposed to be out there. He looked like one of the guys from St. Pete High that snuck out there and got a practice in. But today, he was explosive. I mean, he pulled away from the defense on a big, long run. I want to say it was a big, long reception. It was maybe a 70-yard run where the guy had an angle and couldn't catch him. So when you see that, you try to figure out, okay, he rushed for 2,000 yards, three straight seasons at South Dakota State. But why is he playing in the East-West Shrine Game, and why is he being talked about moving to fullback when we saw him in the playoffs? We saw him yesterday compete, and today he had a great day as far as catching the football being explosive. And when he went 9-on-7, he was doing a great job scoring virtually every time without being touched. So where do you stand on Zach Zinner and what you see out of him?
Well, first off, I don't see a fullback. When you look at him, I don't see 6'2", 220. I'll be interested to see what he. It'll be interesting to see what he comes in. I don't know if you're positive. Do you know if he's been invited? If he got an invite to the combine, or if he's just having a pro day?
I think he got invited to the combine because he again they did a great job this year getting guys that have track records or break records. So he got invited to the combine. So that's a good point. It'll be interesting to see what he runs.
It'll be interesting to see his measurables. And by measurables, I don't necessarily mean his 40 time because, like we spoke about, he's a guy who is not going to wow you when you see him line up. He's not going to intimidate you when you see him line up in the backfield. He's a guy who's just going to go about doing his job, and when you look up, he's going to have 100 yards rushing. Yesterday we saw him, do a couple things and it was subtle things. Caught a flat route out of the backfield, was able to turn it into a 15-yard gain. Nothing spectacular, but 15 yards on a 2-yard pass, a quarterback will take that all day, because that's you not only catching the ball, but you're actually making a first down, moving the chains, and allowing that quarterback not to get hit because he got the ball out quickly. Those are the type of things that he does routinely. And it'll be interesting to see if, given the carries in the actual game, if he gets an opportunity to really carry the ball like I believe he has earned because of his performance as a collegiate, I think that he can have success because I think that the West offensive line is a plus line.
Yeah, especially with the center, B.J. Finney from Kansas State, who we'll talk about now. I mean, once again, we saw him yesterday dominate, and today was the same thing, and this guy has played excellent football the 2 days he's been out here. What were your thoughts on Kenny and what you saw yesterday from a guy that we both think probably should be playing next week at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, I definitely think he's a guy who should be playing at the Senior Bowl. His snaps, underrated is the snap. A lot of times people just forget to talk about it, but the snapping ability was great. It was always at point. Quarterback didn't have to reach up for it. It came right to their hands. They had pace on it, but it wasn't a hot potato, so it was very easily handled. His ability to step and snap is one thing that gets lost, and it's why a lot of people just think that you can move a guard or a tackle or the center, but it really is an art to be able to step and snap successfully at the same time. He does that very well. That allows him to get a step on his defenders. He did a great job of, reach blocking on shade techniques to work to that outside shoulder. He did a good job driving, and he did a phenomenal job in one-on-one pass rush on Monday. What did you see from him today?
I saw today in team drills and, 9-on-7, again, working well with the guards on either side, doing a great job in washing guys down the line. He and the tackle from TCU, let me grab his name, the offensive tackle from TCU, Teo Fabulugi, 6'3", 66. I call the guy Cascade, because he washed so many guys the other day. He was doing a great job once again today, and it was an unfair matchup. He got a hold of Ben Henney from Kansas and literally drove him through the ground, it was a bit of an unfair matchup because, Henney stands about 6'1", 220, and here you have Fabulugi at 6'6", 333 with quick feet, so that was an unfair matchup, but Henney did a great job today, in combination with the offensive line and guards, getting to the second level and getting key blocks on backer. So I like what I saw today as well from him. Now, defensive line, we talked about their defensive line yesterday and how well they played, but one guy that stood today was Xavier Williams from Northern Iowa. Now, yesterday we was focused on Chucky Hunter, and how well he can play on the side, maybe as a 4-eye, but had some limitations everywhere else. But the Northern Iowa kid, Xavier Williams, had a great day at 6'2", 308. And in one-on-one drills, the quickness was there, and also showed the an underrated bull rush that got a lot of penetration, bent the guy backwards virtually in those drills.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get a chance to focus much on him yesterday when I was there. I was focusing more on Hunter. I think we also, you know, I was looking at the guy from San Jose State, Rasidi. I thought he struggled yesterday with his get off and with keeping his balance. I also thought that Ifedi from University of Memphis really had a hard time keeping their balance yesterday. And Ifedi's a guy who looks really athletic. 6'4", they list him as 270, which seems a lot bigger than what he looks. But he moves really well, but he had a really hard time, keeping his balance. And so I was really interested to hear your take on how those two guys look today as compared to yesterday, because I know that yesterday they really struggled because they kept falling off balance and the offensive linemen were just swallowing them up. But they are both guys who seemed as if they were working with some athletic ability if they've ever, you know, got their feet up underneath them.
Ifedi today looked more like the guy that you saw yesterday, and I don't know if he's 100%, but he wasn't getting off blocks. He wasn't, you know, as aggressive. When I saw him versus Temple, here's another guy that the light came on within the middle of the game. I couldn't find him because of jersey numbers that was wore that day, and it was dark, and I couldn't really see. All of a sudden, he showed up and made play after play, run, stopping a run, getting after the quarterback, being disruptive, pass breakup, sacks. And you didn't see that same type of dog from him today. So I don't know what's going on, but he definitely is a guy that I like that also has to pick it up. Now, moving over to another guy that stood out in the secondary, Bryce Callahan, 5'9", 185. But I don't know who is the defensive back coach at Rice, but he's doing a hell of a job because those guys are active. Their hands are where they need to be, and they do a good job in press. And he has a lot of Cortland Finnegan to his game, a lot of the guy that plays Grimes, Brent Grimes, to his game. He's a feisty player. He's active. Great technique. And the one thing he did today that I really like, he had a great play versus his old teammate, Jordan Taylor. He turned and found the ball. So they were doing one-on-ones, got his hands on him, was able to pass him off to the sideline where he used the sideline as his friend, walled him off, ran step for step, put this – and this is the little nuance that you saw. Leaned back into him a little bit as he jumped, you know, which puts the receiver at a disadvantage. You know what I'm talking about, where you kind of like lean in a back a little bit, but you're giving you jumping, so it looks like you're jumping for the ball, but you're really trying to push the receiver out of bounds. He did that perfection and made a great pass breakup against the 5 receiver.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he's a guy who, you know, is coming out to prove something. You know, Rice doesn't get a lot of pub. He's got questions about size. I think that everybody is so enamored with these, you know, long corners now, the 6'1" corners and the 6'2" corners and the 5'11" corners that sometimes these 5'9" guys, you know, slip through the cracks and all of a sudden you look up and they're starting, you know, for someone. Nikhil Roby is a guy who comes to mind, you know, a guy out of Lakeland, Florida. Not Lakeland, Florida, Lake Wells, Florida, Frostproof. You know, a guy who went to USC, was a stud at USC, but because of his size, you know, fell in the draft and went lower than what he probably thought he should. And then you looked up, and on Sundays he was starting as a nickelback. Then he was starting outside, and he continued to make a name for himself as a quality defensive back in the NFL because those guys tend to be more dogged. They tend to be more in your face, technically proficient, because they know they have to. They can't just rely on, you know, their big frame or their athleticism to get by.
And another guy that did a great job today in coverage was TCU's safety Sam Carter. He did a great job in one and also a sound job in team drills where he had to make multiple reads, get over top of routes, and also close in on guys in the alley. So he did a great job. But let's talk about Josh Shaw out of USC. We saw yesterday him just look above and beyond, better than everybody out there on the field. And today he was matched up versus Ruffin. He was matched up versus Williams. He was matched up versus Austin Hill from Arizona. And this is a guy that excelled each and every time. I'm very impressed with his game. We know he has first-round talent. The biggest thing for him will be what happened off the field. So that's out of our hands as far as evaluators is concerned. But on the field, what we saw yesterday translated to the day, and he was even better today. So what are your thoughts on Josh Shaw, USC?
He's a plus-level talent. I mean, you can see it in his hands. You can see it in his feet. He was very patient. He was the only defensive back that I can say that I had my eyes on whom looked like he didn't look like he was frazzled by the start of a play. He didn't get flustered by whatever the receiver was doing. He just waited for the receiver to do whatever he wanted to do, and then he punched him in the chest. And then he turned and ran with him. Does it mean that no one completed a pass on him? Of course it doesn't, because it's one-on-ones, and one-on-ones are geared towards the receiver. But he was always in great position. He was always in a position to make a play. He made more plays than he did, and he did an excellent job in press coverage and in off-man. And those are the two types. Those are the type of things he's going to have to show because of the perception of who he is. Because of a boneheaded thing he did, will most likely drop him, you know, in the draft. But it won't drop him far if he continues to have these types of performance, and then he goes to the combine and he drops numbers that are phenomenal. He's gonna have an opportunity to still be a second day pick, and that's saying a lot from a guy who didn't play most of the season. So you know he's fresh, and you know he's probably going to be healthier than a lot of other defensive backs.
And I have to give credit to one specialist before I get your thoughts on what you're going to be looking for tomorrow. And this is a guy that had an outstanding day in the bowl game. And that's Nicholas Sade, the kicker from North Carolina State. And putting the football today was excellent. I'm talking about as soon as you a lot of times you didn't have to see, you just heard it, and you knew it was a good punt coming off the foot of Sade. And this is a guy that did a great job kicking in at, the St. Petersburg Bowl when North Carolina State played, I want to say UCF. Great game.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And he had a great day of practice today. So the kick for the West looks strong, man. And he did a great job today kicking the butt. What are you looking forward to seeing, and what are you looking forward to seeing tomorrow at the practices?
I must admit I am looking a little more local, as far as some of the Florida kids. I think it's important for some of these guys that are getting an opportunity with this East team. A guy like Jonathan Feliciano, a guy like Shane McDermott. Really interesting to see what they do with Andre Davis II. Andre Davis II is a guy who had the unenviable task of being the best wide receiver on a team with a revolving door at quarterback for pretty much the duration of his college career. I don't think we've been able to actually see the best Andre Davis because he's had to carry subpar quarterbacks his entire career at USF. He's a guy who, depending upon how he does at the combine and what type of offseason he has, he's probably going to be a day three guy, but he has a chance to step onto a roster, not only make a roster, but be a fourth or third receiver pretty quickly. I think he has that type of talent. So I want to see exactly what he does, especially because, in my opinion, he's probably playing with the best quarterback he can possibly play with in this game in Hudson Mason. So he's got to be able to make something happen with that type of quarterback throwing him the ball. And so it'll be interesting to see what he does. And then I want to get a look at Chickalo and really see what Chickalo can do. And then obviously looking at the normal guys that we continue to, you know, spotlight, Devin Gardner is a guy who I want to see and get a look at. Hudson Mason, I'll be keeping an eye on how he throws the ball. Is he a guy who can be a late third day pick? Or is he a guy who's going to have to be a free agent and try to make his bones coming up off of a practice squad or something like that?
And what I'm going to be looking for is for the E squad, I want to pay more attention to the cornerbacks. A guy today had a great day, Ty Smith out of Towson. I've seen him live twice versus Delaware and versus Villanova. But I want to pay close attention to him. I want to pay close attention to Dean Marlowe, who we talked to on the show before, out of James Madison and a safety. And also, I'm very impressed with what I see out of Damian Swan out of Georgia. So I'm going to pay attention to the East cornerbacks a little bit more tomorrow. And for the West squad, the linebackers, I want to pay even more close attention to, because I've actually become a big fan of what I've seen from James Walters out of Stanford, a guy that was a highly talented high school recruit. I want to say he was a five-star that ended up signing with Stanford, turned down some bigger name programs to go out west, and did a great job out there. And here's a guy in Heaney out of Kansas, speed guy. He's going to have to play probably a weak side linebacker. And Vigil had another big day today. He popped a Crockett in the hole. I'm sorry, not Crockett. Zinner in the hole. In 9-7. I want to pay close to the linebackers for the West and a cornerback for the East, and I'm going to be looking for tomorrow.
I'm sorry, say that again, Emory.
I said, no, that's what I would be looking forward to seeing tomorrow. So we talked about a lot, Gene. So this was a quick wrap-up. We only do an hour of these wrap-ups, and this was Tuesday's practice, and a lot of great players on both sides. The East was out there in full pads in the morning. The West were able to do their thing once again on a dry field. So we got a lot of good football coming up again, and we're also going to try to get some coaches to sit down with us later on in the week once things die down, perhaps on a Friday. But if you're out there, you got to – I'm talking to the fans. You got to come out and see some of these practices, man. You're seeing some great talent. The Shrine people have done a great job in putting together a great week of practice. Everything is laid back, and it's not as stiff and rigid as some other All-Star games, but this was a great see a lot of good football tomorrow, and I look forward to chopping up with Gene again. And that's four sets of eyes from football game plan, four sets of football game plan eyes from practice, and that's always going to be a great thing. So Gene, thanks for calling in, thanks for joining, and I will catch up with you tomorrow, and we're going to take a look at football tomorrow and break down those prospects and meet up again tomorrow evening for a practice recap on what we saw. So I'll get with you tomorrow, and I want to say to everyone out there, follow Gene Clemens. Follow me on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. Be on the lookout for the West practice video preview that will be posted in about 10 minutes, and this show will be archived on FootballGamePlan.com/network. So for Gene, I'm Emory Hunt, the Czar of the Playbook. We'll talk to you tomorrow after practice.